This week on Zen and Not Zen, Pro Time Edition.
I had a painting made, from my understanding, in 2017 of Dolly Parton and Beyonce commissioned.
The two things.
Yeah, I got some two things. So I have put this into the universe that this thing would happen.
Good for you.
And it is finally happening. He's releasing a book, and he just came over for a photo shoot, and then he's interviewing everyone that ordered and commissioned a painting, and we have two of them. And we had another of Angela Lansbury doing burlesque as, like, Murder, She Wrote, so she's got, like, Cabot Cove tattooed on her chest, and, like, has, like, a lighthouse, and, like, well, he came over to do a photo shoot of all the paintings, and so Mandy and I both stripped down to our underwear and then put the painting in front of us, and so it looks like we're naked behind the painting. Yeah. So when his book comes out, there's going to be a naked picture of Mandy and I both just having naked Angela Lansbury.
Dude, we're famous adjacent.
That's
yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Bro time.
Well, I got to imagine it's just tough to be a public figure.
Yeah.
And have people constantly, like, coming up to you. And I don't even know... I have no idea what that's like.
Yeah.
Not that person at all. But when I worked at Jillian's, Gary Payton would come in to... meet my closer. Gary Payton would
come
in to Jill's
all
the time.
I'm, like, looking at the fucking dog.
But, no, Gary Payton would come into Jill's all the time with some of the other Sonics players when Sonics were still in town. And he was a fucking asshole.
Mm-hmm.
He was a big fucking asshole.
He's always kind of had that attitude.
Yeah, he would only want to be served by women. That he chose. He had this very arrogant cockiness about him, you know. And yeah, he was a superstar, but, like, whatever, you know. You're human, right? But okay, so I had a few run-ins with Gary.
Didn't you play NFL Blitz with him?
Okay, so he had we at Jillian's we had this big gigantic NFL Blitz game, and it was, like, classic, you know,
fucking
5-on-5.
Big projection screen. The big one. Arcades are just not really a thing
ever.
Shame.
And we would get off work, and that was, like, one of the things that the staff would do is we would just get off work, grab some drinks, go downstairs, and jam on Blitz. And we would just fucking free play, right? We worked it.
Yeah.
That was also Gary's favorite game. And so one day I was down there, I got off work, and I was down there playing video games on a fucking Thursday night. Me and Angelo just fucking going at Blitz, button mashing, right? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, somebody taps me on the shoulder. And I turn around, and it's this big-ass dude, and he's like, Gary wants to play. I'm like, I don't give a fuck.
Gary has to wait. His turn is not
Gary,
up yet.
Gary's got to put his quarters up on the fucking...
Yeah.
Right. I'm like, Gary can wait. I work here. I am on this machine. I don't give a fuck who you are, who you represent. Get the fuck away from me. This is bullshit, right? And Angelo is like, yeah, we both work there. We both know Gary's.
Don't your turn yet, guys.
Yeah, no, seriously. It's like, fucking wait your turn. Don't fucking
you play the winner.
Like
send your handler over.
Yeah. And so, like, and he kind of stood there and, like, bowed up. And all of a sudden, Les, one of my bouncers, comes around. He's like, hey, wait his fucking turn, right? Les is, like, a 6'8" big, humongous man, right? So they ended up waiting. And Gary's like, well, I got next then. I'm like, dude, you're a fucking asshole, man.
You
can buy this entire place and fucking do what you want. You're going to sit here and throw quarters at somebody for fucking playing Blitz?
You,
like,
know what
on,
it would have been so cool? If Gary Payton had come up and been like, hey, guys, oh, are we playing? Oh, man, can I get next?
Yeah.
Like, guaranteed I would have been like, oh, you want the next turn? Like, I would have just handed
it's,
you know what I mean?
It's,
like,
interesting because that you would think that would be the way the exchange could be or should be.
Right.
I'd be
so
much more
or
amped
would
up.
Be, or would be if we were all star point guards at the time.
So I got
who fucking knows?
Beautiful counter story to that. Now I've got a follow-up. Really follow-up first. Gary Payton came back after he went to the Lakers.
Yeah.
After he won a title. That man was the coolest fucking guy I've ever met. He finally got
his
ego
title
in check.
Won his title with the Heat.
Okay, whoever he won his title with. He came back to Seattle, and he was, like, the nicest guy.
Yeah.
He was such a nice guy. Like, all that pressure... to perform and to achieve and all that shit, gone,
right?
Really?
Like,
I mean, a span of how many years, though? I mean, because, like...
Number of years. Because, I mean, I was still there. I was there for 8 years.
You stood there for 8 years. So,
yeah,
I mean, you're probably late
20s
to mid to late 30s,
mm-hmm.
if I was to guess.
Mid-30s,
like, you know, as far as Gary's age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the other part of that is, you know, working at a sports bar that big in Seattle, we have tons of people that come through.
Yeah.
So one day I was sitting there at the front desk, And somebody called and said, hey, the Chicago Cubs are in town. It was one of the Holyfield fights, one of the last Holyfield fights. Mm. They want to come in and watch the Holyfield
Lewis
fight,
or something shit like that. Yeah,
big pay-per-view.
Yeah, getting my nostalgia on.
And we got this private room upstairs. So, like, the whole Chicago Cubs baseball team comes in. Sammy Sosa, like, all those guys back in the late...
peak Chicago Cubs. Right. Yeah, totally.
Kerry Wood.
Warren Moon comes in. And just so, like, the word gets out that the Cubs are in town, they're at Jillian's, they're watching the fight. Warren Moon comes in, right? Yeah. Just all these stars and celebrities just start coming in.
Who's Warren Moon?
Warren Moon was the quarterback for the Houston Oilers. As a commentator. Cool.
For all the non-sports. I asked that question for all the listeners in non-sports.
Went to UW, was one of the first major black quarterbacks.
Yeah. I grew up in Houston, so he was the quarterback of the Oilers.
Went to the CFL because he wouldn't get drafted in the NFL because he was black, and then he was the quarterback right before Matt Hasselbeck, right before he retired. He was hella old. Right,
yeah. Did you just say that he was the first black quarterback?
No, but he was the first major one.
Got it. Okay.
You know, there was a notion that it was a, you know.
Because I was like, what year are we living in? That is wild. But,
yeah, he broke the color barrier in 1978. You know, I'm fucking that up, but he was the main, you know, that was why he went to the CFL.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
But all that being said,
lots of DUIs in Seattle.
Yeah,
actually. According to him, he doesn't have a fucking drinking problem. He said, hey man, I saw an interview where it's like, yeah, I know I got a bunch of DUIs, but I don't have a drinking problem. I'm like, well, you know, that's cool. You know,
And famous people get DUIs? How?
Well,
drivers, you have money for cab, you have money for Uber. How is that possible?
I mean,
Maserati ain't gonna drive itself.
Maserati goes 185, bro.
But all right, so all those folks are there, and I'm standing up with so you got the Chicago Cubs, you got Warren Moon, there's a couple other big name local
Seattleites. Some Mix-a-Lot or some shit.
I think Sean Kemp was up there.
Yeah.
And I'm standing there at the front of this private room with my bouncer Les. And we're just chatting, and there's another very small human being walking up, being escorted by a bouncer towards us, wearing a trench coat and a big safari hat. And I'm like, well, this is interesting. And Les and I are like, who do you think it is? And he's like, I bet it's some punk rocker. He's like the lead singer of the
Spike
Ramones.
Lee
and I'm
or
like,
shit.
And I'm like, no, it's probably like the fucking ball boy for the Chicago Cubs or something. They're like, hey, let Trevor come up. You know, Trevor's gotta have his day.
And Trevor put on his best threads, totally, which is
his
trench
best
coat and
safari hat. Yeah.
So my man walks up in his trench coat and his safari hat, tips his hat, and he's got this gigantic green mohawk, and I'm like, that's Eddie Vedder. This is when Eddie Vedder was protesting Ticketmaster, and he had his mohawk until Ticketmaster would abide by his rules, right?
Oh,
whatever.
God, I love this man.
And
Eddie Vedder's a shorter guy, huh?
He's a short man.
Five two, probably.
No, he's probably 5'5", Tom Cruise, 5'5", 5'7". Yeah, just shorter than you think.
So I tower over motherfuckers at 5'9".
It's in there, yeah.
And I'm not, just short, tall. Don't
we love short kings. Yeah.
Anyone who knows Adam knows he puts a lot of fucking depth into height and someone's height.
So
we did have a height chart at work.
We did have a height chart at work, with the pictures on there.
Yeah, it was good work.
So he tips his hat, and I'm like, oh my God, hi, can I get you a drink? And he's like, yeah, gin and tonic, real sweet. And he's like, cool, yeah, I'll just be in here. I'm like, of course you're going to be in there.
He's a huge Cubs fan.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Huge Cubs fan.
So I get his drink, go back in there, and he's just, chit-chatting with people, moving around, doing his thing, and I didn't want to bother him. So I'm like, here's your drink, Mr. Vedder. That was my first time. I actually met Eddie Vedder 5 times, but being in Seattle, working in restaurants, you're going to meet.
I can't believe I haven't yet.
And so, drop his drink off, he does his thing. And I'm, back to working. And then I'm standing out by that private entrance, and Eddie Vedder comes out, unassisted, no bouncers, nobody, and just, walks like he's going to the bathroom, like a normal human being, which, of course, he is, but he's still fucking Eddie Vedder.
Yeah.
And I'm watching him, oh, this will be interesting, because the club's packed. It's fucking packed. And he walks towards the bathroom, and there's a big group of people around a pool table playing pool, and there's this person with, an intense shot. Right, lining it up, everybody's waiting. It's like an 8-ball shot. And he's like, oh my God. And Eddie just stops and he's like, oh,
wait,
this is fun.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he was watching because, he doesn't want to walk by the person shooting, but he's also observing the intensity of this moment that this group of humans is.
I would do the same thing.
And the guy shooting is in front of where Eddie's walking. So the guy, person shooting, does not know this person's behind him. And there's 10 people all do oh God, what's going to happen? And all of a sudden, somebody stops and stands up. And then another person stops and stands up. And I kind of watch this like whole like
you're any better.
Yeah, prairie dogs. Oh my god, yeah. Better.
It's a better. Yeah. It's any better. And then the guy stands up who's shooting and turns around. He's like, oh my god. And Eddie's like, please, just, I don't want to disturb your shot. Please take your shot.
You can shoot you, now. You completely fucked my chances of making this
go
now.
Go take a shot.
Yeah.
But he was just such a sweet man. Like, he was so sweet about his approach to humanity.
Yeah.
And not like, hey, I'm fucking lead singer of Pearl Jam. Get out of my way. I got to fucking pee. You know, and just walking by and pushing people over. Hey, I got fucking, this is my game. This is my pool table.
I've literally never heard a bad story about that man. I've always heard that he is just the coolest dude.
Yeah. He actually, so when the Pearl Jam movie came out about 15 years ago or so, it was like a docuseries, a documentary about their band and shit. I was working at the movie theater, the high-end movie theater in Redmond, and his wife contacted us. And Eddie apparently had been he had been a regular at the movie theater. He just loved the comfort and shit. A lot of high-end people do. But they reached out to us and booked a private screening event for his movie. And members of Pearl Jam, their families, their friends, all rented out a theater and came in and watched. And they invited public in, too. Like, it was such a cool experience. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, celebrity.
And I like
damn.
how much he likes the city.
Yeah.
Like, he's, yeah.
He's down in White Center, I think, is where he lives.
Oh, God bless him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, which is funny because it's just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there were, I mean, I think before my time up here, maybe you guys might have heard these stories, but I've heard stories of like Dave Matthews just popping up in coffee shops before he was Dave Matthews.
Well,
just,
I mean, I didn't think he actually grew up around here. I think he was like a Northeast guy.
Well, I know he's from Carolina.
Carolina.
But I think he migrated over to this area. And was,
well,
like,
he lives in Wallingford now. Yeah. So like his kids go to that private school.
Dave Matthews lives in Wallingford?
Yeah, that's another reason why he plays Memorial Day Labor Day weekend every year at the course.
He's lived here
for like 20 years.
I know it was their tour bus that accidentally...
It was Dave himself that hit the switch that put all that shit on those people in Chicago.
It's Chicago, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you hear about that?
No.
Oh, so yeah, okay. God damn. Internet's deep. So, one of the things that I will do, before we went live on this podcast, I was talking about how I want to go to Chicago. That's one of the places I want to go. One of the things I want to do on that, and I've had a lot of people do it, is there's a riverboat architectural tour where you just go on the river and you just see all the fucking cool buildings. Worst timing ever. Dave's tour bus is on a bridge. And I guess he's in the bathroom and he hits the wrong fucking switch or whatever.
I did
hear
about this.
And dumps like 600 pounds of piss and shit all over these tourists that are just fucking like, looking like, you know, like.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Mouths open. Oh my God.
Yes. Fucking savage.
I did hear. I had blacked that. I blocked that out of my memory.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
So we
crash
all
into you.
We all have a mutual friend. I will leave this friend's name out of it. We all know this human being.
Okay.
This human being worked on a boat for a little while, and a couple years ago, this person was getting on the boat to go do their stint months at the thing out in the water, and this person got on the boat and got their stuff settled, and they were still docked, right?
Yeah.
Got their stuff settled in their bunk and was like, nah, I gotta go to the bathroom. Went to the bathroom, hit the button, got up, and immediately heard, oh my God, no! And she's like, what was that? And somebody goes, did somebody just flush the toilet? And this person said, oh my God, that was me. And apparently because they were docked,
it just goes
it was above... the water.
Oh, no.
And so it all
flew
out onto the dock right by where this person was walking.
Oh my God. They did Matthews them.
That was the very start of this trip. This months long trip out to sea.
That's some shit I would do. Just not even thinking.
So bad.
Just muscle memory. You just don't even think about it.
I can.
I still do it at porter potties. Like, I'm still looking to flush. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just.
Like,
oh,
I'll have countless times where, like,
that's,
I'll have something in my head like,
savage. I forgot
like,
about
don't
that.
Do this,
I probably
don't
remember
do this.
That
don't do this. Don't do this. And I'll finish what I'm doing and then just reach and do the thing that I'm, like, telling myself actively not to do. Don't do it. Don't do it.
You're
I'm
outside
like,
of your body watching yourself do this thing. Oh, my fucking God.
Oh, man. But, you know, like, fuck, man. We get these embarrassing moments, you know. It's There's I've hidden from so many embarrassing moments.
Yeah.
That it's so human now, right? We're just humans. Like, just it's a thing, right? But I think a little bit of that has to go into the inability to have confronting conversations. It's that same kind of feelings. Like, we just don't want to be those charged of embarrassment of, like,
yeah,
put in those places where we just maybe feel a little out of control, because we haven't really had an opportunity to like be entrenched in those moments and feel the joy in it without feeling also like attacked.
Well, embarrassment comes from being vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard in this society to do that. Mm-hmm. It has to do with status as well. You don't want to seem less than, or you don't want to seem, you know, looked down on.
Well, I'm so a greater, like, than or equal to guy myself.
Yeah. I feel like my entire life is just one embarrassing moment to the next. Like, yeah. I feel like I live in a constant stage of embarrassment.
Yeah. You know,
I'm embarrassed listening to this. I can't listen to the podcast sometimes. Because I listen to my own voice and I listen to the things I say. Because when we first started, I was like, oh, this is my, oh,
yeah.
And then I start listening to my own shit, and I was like, my entire body, I can feel all the blood leave my extremities and be like, this is out for anyone to hear, and I sound like such a fuck.
I can't listen to the podcast. No, so I can't. Just fucking rip myself to shreds.
Same. Yeah.
I get that. And this is
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
No, I do not.
I have to listen to these over and over again because I edit them, right?
Right.
Yeah. I'm not like editing like chunks out, but I want to just, you know, little polish up.
Yeah, exactly. You just got to remove some shit, Robin.
Yeah.
Overdub some things. Exactly. Like, oh, that was a really loud olive bark over that thing.
Exactly. We're going to beep, 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 beep.
But when I first started, when COVID hit and I started my YouTube channel, I was very rusty on the whole video editing and all that shit. And so, like, I force myself to listen to my and watch my classes over and over again. Insane. It's cringing. It's so fucking hard. But the thing that you got to remember, and somebody told me, I can't remember who, but somebody told me, is like, you're experiencing yourself the way everybody already experiences.
That's the most horrifying part.
But you've got to think too, these people aren't running scared and hiding from you. They love you and then embrace you, right? Because you're not used to the way your external voice is heard and the way your vernacular is received doesn't make it cringy to other people, right? It's just, that's the way that
nobody sees
to you.
Nobody sees you the way you see you.
But to be fair, like, I've, you know, you know plenty of actors and comedians and shit like that.
People, and nobody can watch themselves.
Exactly.
Nobody.
It's not a thing that's really, like, we don't... My buddy Julian just like fucking wrote and directed and, you know, did his own movie. And like, with the exception of editing it, he's like, I don't want to fucking watch hear myself, because I'm going to tear myself apart. But I'm sure De Niro does that. Pacino does that. Yeah. I'm sure
De Niro just sired a kid at 80.
Is he 80 now?
Yeah.
80.
Uh-huh. He has you a think he's artificial or I love that
you said sired a kid.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what it is.
Sired
a kid.
Dude, I fucking literally saw that on, I knew about it, but I saw a photo of him looking fucking 80 with a 9-month-old. Like, ooh, I'm just like, dude, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
You're going to grow up?
Why
is
it?
You're going to grow up and be a big kid?
I've never seen any of those movies. Meet the Fockers.
Oh, the Meet the Parents? Yeah. The Meet the Parents is actually
I watched the first one.
Yeah, I watched the first one.
But why is it that women, like, their reproductive system stops at a certain age, but men can just keep...
It's the fucking patriarchy embedded in biology.
Well, the patriarchy, because, you know...
90-plus person.
The patriarchy.
It is wild.
Fertile semen.
Anything over 35 is considered a geriatric pregnancy.
Geriatric.
And
terrible word.
It is, it's just, it is so unfair. And the shit that our body goes through with menstruation and then menopause, like, y'all don't ever have to deal with any of that. And our bodies are
They're
just in a constant state of just like hormone overflow. And then birthing a child and then carrying a child. It's just like, it's mind-boggling that women aren't seen as something like stronger, like that society doesn't just take it for what it is biologically, what our bodies do. I'm going to correct myself, not just women, people that have, you know, reproductive
ovaries.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But it is, it's wild to me that we are not superior.
Yeah.
Because we are superior.
Well, I think that's the reason why. It's because, and I'm not saying like the reason why, but I love ideas and I love to think about ideas and throw shit around, right? Yeah. And so the idea that I have around that, and then it's not my idea, but the one that I've looked at that I really appreciate digging into is like the female gender, natural ovaries, uterus, yeah. right, is a very magical being.
Yeah.
You can create life, yeah. right? You have to have, like, there has to be something put in, but there's a creation of life that gestates inside of you. There's, you know, the land of milk and honey people talk about, because milk and honey are both things that you don't have to kill anything to sustain yourself on, mm-hmm. right? Honey is naturally produced by bees. Milk is naturally produced by mammals, right? Now, we technically, quote unquote, rape the female cows in this industry now, right. but it's still a natural industrial thing. So issues, we weren't industrial, right? So milk and honey. Women create milk naturally from their own body. They're mm-hmm. creating substance from their own body without, I mean, it takes energy from their body, but it's not stripping them from right. a natural thing from their body, right? Yeah. So there is a magical creation that is the feminine body and the feminine recognizing human being. It scares the shit out of people, right? And I think that's why it's so demonized.
1,000%.
There, you know, we are scared of what we don't understand. Look at the witch trials. Mm-hmm. You know, for the longest time, we probably didn't understand how a human being was created inside of another human being. So it's like, well, clearly there's something weird going on with that. Science is catching up. You know, religion demonized.
And I think that goes into like so much of the oppression of of women in our society with abortion, with all like, we're like they, you are threatened on some level about the power that women hold.
Yeah.
So we have to do everything we can institutionally to make them hate themselves, to make them hate each other, to make it hard as fuck to exist, to, you know, carry children, have them second question themselves. Like that is how you, deny them their power that you are so scared of. Because if we fully unleash that, it would be a different world. Yeah. We would be living in a different world.
Well, it's funny because that's like what you just described. I love reading topics. Mm-hmm. I don't always tie myself to the topics I read, but just, you know, it's good to know what's out there, right? And there's a book I just read called The 5G War, and it's basically talking about how, and you know, I think Bukowski and Chomsky talked about this in the 70s, but how the next world war isn't going to be fought with weapons. It's going to be fought with data, right?
Yeah.
And misinformation.
We're in it right now.
Exactly. Right?
Which is why we think we're waiting for World War II bombs, and it's just like...
We're already in it.
We're in
100%
it.
100% in it. But what you just said, I think, is the thing, right? It's almost like that mentality was beta tested on the feminine gender, mm-hmm. right? And so we're going to demean you, we're going to turn you against each other, we're going to make you think that you have to be better than the other woman to feel attractive, to feel
we're going to make you hate your body,
all that shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
All that's being turned around on the entire population now. Yeah. So it's almost like it was beta tested on women to see, okay, so let's see if we can get the strongest group of humans to fall on themselves.
Yeah, if we can get women to do it, we can get men to do it for sure. 100%. Yeah, that's such a good fucking
point. You know?
Point.
It's like, fuck, man. And it's like, you know, I don't want to think there's nefarious shit going on, like, you know, the Elon Musk and Bill Gates of the world are out there puppet stringing fucking all this shit together.
I also think it's giving them too much credit.
Exactly.
It's giving them weight. Yeah. I don't think there's like secret meetings of like these guys that are, that have done good, cool things to some
the
degree,
loose technologically. Change argument.
But like, I think it happens, like you said, like it is a, I don't know if zeitgeist is the right word, but like it's a cultural, social thing that we just slowly, it's a crab boiling effect.
Yeah,
so like
we're
slowly cooking it. Oh, this is working and we don't know why it's working. But if we push this law or if we, you know, fix this loophole, like it is not something that's fully intentional. It's not like there's a monthly meeting. I don't, you know, imagine of all the world leader, like the list of the things
like
that we're going to do to the serfs. Like, this is the thing we got away with. Let's see if we can get away with it more. Let's see if we can push this boundary. And totally.
Yeah. Did you ever see the show, The Pentaveret with Mike Myers?
Yes.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. 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 Great. Oh, yeah. The meetings.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's the antithesis of the secret council of nastiness. It's more the secret council of like, let's keep the world together in some kind of way.
Right.
But it's still like that same kind of idea. But when I saw the Pentaveret, I'm like, I really hope that there's like, you know, a group of Mike Myers-esque people out there that are nefariously trying to just demonize the world as well as save the world. Like,
yeah,
cool. Like, I don't need to know what's going on behind
that. So I don't even know what you're talking about, but the other Mike Myers, Dr. Evil, that's trying to destroy the world and like his group of people, the militant group of the Salvation. So,
yeah.
Didn't know he did another version of that.
It was a Netflix show.
It was.
And not a lot of people watched it.
It was great, but it was very good.
It's very interesting because, like, in his very first movie, So I Married an Axe Murderer, that he started.
I've never actually seen that.
Fantastic movie.
Oh, you got to watch it.
Yeah.
Put that on the list.
His father in that movie and the son, the grandson, the redheaded kid. Their relationship and the way he talks shit to that kid is fucking priceless. It's 90s, classic 90s Jules, right? Totally. Couldn't get away with it now, but it's like, man, that is hilarious.
Yeah.
But in that movie, his dad, so that's like 92. In that movie, his dad, who Mike Myers plays, talks about the Pentaverin. And he talks about it. He's like, that fucking Pentaverin. The five
fucking
guys.
Long con.
Yes, exactly.
He's been working on it for 30 years.
Here comes the fucking Pentaverin miniseries on Netflix.
My God.
I'm like, holy shit. Good for you, Mike Myers.
And it probably came out in 2022. So it's probably like an exact 30-year cycle.
Fucking hell, man.
That's fucking wild.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
It's like one of those things like fucking... Dude off Jurassic Park, fucking the mailman Newman is wearing all the Goonies costumes throughout the movie.
Oh, I love those little Easter eggs.
Yeah.
I don't think I heard that one. That's fucking cool.
Whatever the fuck is... God, why can't I remember his name?
Yeah, what's Newman's name?
You didn't say... What was his character's name?
Hold on.
Nedry.
Nedry?
Ned?
Wasn't it Nedry? Was his name Nedry, the guy on Jurassic Park when he stole the fucking vial of shit?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, those.
But he did. He wore Chunks Hawaiian shirt. Oh my God.
He wears Chunks Hawaiian shirt, the oil slick. There's four outfits that he wears, all things that Chunk wears.
Now, okay, so, Kinsey, maybe you can answer this question. But how do people come up with that shit? Is that like the actor itself is like, I'm going to do this and I hope that people are cool with that? Or is that like people
That was conspire? Spielberg. That was Spielberg did both movies.
Well, I know, but was that like, I mean, just how do those Easter eggs come
Who
up?
Fucking
like,
Dennis,
no, that's
Nedry.
Fucking cool.
Nedry was like, you were Nedry. You were like the pool. All right,
good on you.
Well, I think about that a lot because I think about artists like Taylor Swift and Beyonce who have this like long con of an artistic narrative that they will pull. And so I do think there are artistic geniuses that will do it stuff like that on purpose.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it, like there was one interview I was watching. Oh, it was Stephen Colbert who was interviewing the creator of Fleabag, who is Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Okay.
She was the writer and creator of it. And there was this moment in one of the seasons where like a fox... that represented something. And he was like, and Stephen Colbert was like, so I have a question about the fox and what it really meant. She's like, oh, okay. And he goes, well, I think it's this. And he goes in this long, you know, I think it stands for this poem. And then he recites the poem and it fits so perfectly into that narrative. And she goes, I wish that was right. Like, I wish that was...
I think I've actually
I wish that was
seen,
right.
I actually think I've seen that
So
interview.
I think there are things that we as humans put into things that like, I mean, we all... or on the same thought wave at some level. So I feel like a lot of the Easter eggs are intentional. I feel like a lot of it is just like total coincidence, synchronicity. You can make it fit, which is why conspiracy theories sometimes like work out.
There's a podcast I haven't heard of that links up the Scorpion song Wind to Change with the CIA or some shit. Do you remember hearing about this?
Yeah, totally.
Like there's a whole thing about this. The guy's like, I really wish that was true.
Yeah.
She's like, that's so much better than she goes, I can't even tell you what my thing is now, but when anyone asks, this is what I'm going to say because that's a way better answer.
Right. Well, it's like, you know, humans love stories and, you know, we'll find symbolism, we'll find, you know, relatableness you know, within that stuff. And it's so funny because like, you know, like the Big Lebowski, we talked about the last episode, but
the Donnie
thing, right? But like the Big Lebowski in general, like there's
people
been
are dissecting that one,
created off the Big Lebowski called Dudism.
Yeah.
No, I swear to God, they have yearly conferences. There's millions.
There's Lebowski Fest.
Thousands of
and
people.
And instead of taking the blood of Christ, they all just drink White Russians.
Yeah, the White Russians.
Yeah,
hey,
yeah,
man,
yeah.
There's a beverage here, man. But yeah, seriously. So, I mean, like we look for meaning, right? We look for it. We thirst for it. And especially, you know, I like the idea that Western culture is starved for culture because we don't have any. We've stolen all the culture that we have. Yep. And so we don't really have an idea of what that is. And so the idea of like the appropriation, we just, we don't have anything. So it's like, oh my God, look, there's something. There's colors. There's multiple gods, multiple deity, whatever it is, you know, because we're so starved because we feel so bad with all the things we've
recognized. But our minds are still the same human being minds. Right, and totally. So they are, starving. So yeah, like we starving for it.
We find that. You know, especially in stories like Star Wars and the Star Treks and like all these sci-fi kind of things, which do have a lot of meaning within the way that they were written, but the way that they're interpreted by their fan base is massively different.
So, it's endless.
So endless, Lucas, you know, and again, I admittedly am willfully naive on that whole Star Trek, Star Wars thing. Like both of them. Mm. Both of them.
I tried
Simon.
Star Trek. I couldn't really get behind it. I've tried my hardest.
Which series did you start?
I've dabbled in all of them.
Oh, you tried to like go fucker. Yeah. You tried to like, shatten it up.
Yeah, to Patrick Stewart, you know, but I know there's new ones out now. Yeah. So I really
you're
want
a Deep Space Nine kind of guy.
I'm a Stargate guy.
Have either of you tried Doctor Who?
Yeah. Okay. I've actually made through Doctor the first season of Doctor sci-fi. Who. But they have a new one out now, right?
The new Doctor Who?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a new Doctor every couple of years. So there is a new Doctor
now.
So
I'm still with the lanky, white British dude.
Which so, one? Like, there were a couple of them.
Okay.
Tennant, probably?
Six, maybe?
Shorter, kind of.
He's kind of taller guy, I guess.
Oh, kind of baby face?
Yeah.
Matt Smith.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Right. Yeah, that's a good season.
Cool.
Yeah. Tenet is the best season. Tenet is the one right before it.
Right before it, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I kind of, you know, I've heard so much about Doctor Who. Madison. Madison.
Just
right?
Start from the beginning.
Mads is like, she always talks about it.
They're all on HBO. Start from episode Doctor one. Who. It is one of the best TV shows ever created.
I'm on episode one,
fucking Easter eggs. Layers, heart. It's smart. It's also
Did
silly
you say
and
you're
stupid.
Like, that's why I'm on episode one, season one.
No, I said I started episode one, season
okay,
one.
Okay, okay.
But you know, it was just so. What really finally got me is I watched a clip on fucking social media or something. But basically, it was Doctor Who brought back Salvador Dali, who Dali didn't think that his paintings were up to par or some sort, right? Yeah. But he got back, you know, he brought Salvador Dali into a showing of all of his paintings in current time, and hearing people talk so openly, lovingly about the inspiration that they feel from it, and he was like, oh my God, these are my paintings. Like,
right.
Didn't even realize. Like, I was like, oh dude, that's fucking cool, man.
There's
because
so many episodes
we don't
like
realize
that.
Like how special something's going to be. I watched the other day a little documentary about the making of Tommy Boy. Oh. And Farley and David Spade. And David Spade's like, dude, we didn't know any of this stuff was going to be funny.
Right.
We were literally shooting this in Toronto on a shoestring budget that we didn't even know we got. Because who wants to watch a movie about brake pads?
Well,
do I have a mark on my face?
Right. Yeah. You know, it's like, they were just flying
so much
from Toronto to New York, you know, to shoot SNL, to shoot the fucking movie. And they're like, we're just trying to do weird shit.
Wayne's
you
World
know?
Was the same way. They threw that shit together.
Yeah.
Well,
and
the
all
thing
of a sudden,
is
like,
like,
iconic.
People that fail at art try to make what they think will hit.
Right.
The people that are successful at it do what they like, and then they find their audience. And they know that maybe not everyone's going to like it, but I think this is funny, so I'm just going to do what I think is funny. And that's the kind of the trap that you get in sometimes, because you're like, oh, but I think this is funny, but is anyone else going to think this is funny? Oh, I don't want to try it. Right. Oh, I don't know. Yeah.
The book I'm listening to right now is Rick Rubin's The
Creative Mind. Or the creative act.
And that's, he says that. He's like, when he said the audience comes last.
Yes.
You create for you, and you create the best thing that you can make for you.
Yeah.
And that's where the true art comes from. If you want to have success and you want to follow your fan base, that's not creating art for you.
No.
And that's fine. But if you're creating art
for
the
true you.
People will find you. Totally, right? And I love that. The book, that it's fantastic.
I
the
never,
other thing
I
that
never
came up in that
it.
Book?
I never read that book. Tiff did. And, you know, of course, I know Rick Rubin. He produced a lot of amazing
shit. A lot of music,
shit.
Man, yeah.
But
who doesn't even know how to run a soundboard, by the way?
Doesn't even know how to play an instrument.
Doesn't
like
know how to play an instrument?
That's it.
Yeah.
He knows sound.
Yeah. He just knows what he likes.
Yeah.
Her vibe when she read the book was that he comes across as kind of a bit conceited, which is everything I've kind of heard about him.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you guys are like, oh, that book is so good. I'm like, oh, it's kind of more like, yeah, look at how fucking cool I am. And here's a book about how cool I am.
It presents ideas in a way that I hadn't thought about. So
Go ahead. I just think, you know, it's like, you know, when he's at that uber successful level across like multiple genres of music. So again, he can kind of say this shit and kind of people like have to listen to it to a certain extent because he has that luxury.
Can back it up.
Yeah, he can back it up.
But he's also, so just to expand on that, he's not only helping musicians, he's helping all artists
right
now. So he's painters, writers, movie makers. And that's the thing. It's like his approach. Yes, maybe it doesn't work. Maybe it's a little too daring for the very like the new artist that's trying to stake their entire revenue center on their artwork. You know, maybe they do want to make something that's more culturally appealing. But what he's doing is he's like, okay, you want to make true art to the art that you have the ability to make. And you have the financial, the cultural, the backing freedom to do that. Mm-hmm. So do it.
Right.
Don't make something somebody else likes. And if somebody likes it, that's the byproduct of you having the most authentic version of yourself to put out there.
Right.
You know, and I think that's what it really goes down to because, you know, Mon and I would talk a lot about the art that she was doing. And it's like, oh, I don't want to do that because that doesn't look good. I have songwriter friends who are like, well, that was a dumb line. I don't want to write that line. But you have to write the dumb shit. You have to do the ugly stuff that you don't like because that filters out the shit you know you don't like now to lead you to what you do like. There's so many of those processes where it's like, if you're going to be good at something, be prepared to be shit at it.
Right.
Like, write some terrible fucking lines to flush all that shit out so you can be like, I don't want to write like that.
You got
to
get through all the layers before you get to the goal. But, like, the other thing that he brought up in the book that I fucking love is the idea that ideas are vibrations that are existing in their own right, and how he was talking about how you see somebody, an artist, or a movie idea that you had and somebody else made it, or an invention that you had and somebody else got to it first. And it's not that the fact is that it was their idea. Right. The idea is its own living thing. And they just acted, that idea needs to happen. And so whoever gets to it, and if you have that inspiration and don't follow it, that's okay because another idea is going to come through and someone's going to pick it up.
Yep.
So like you don't own your own ideas almost like, and it kind of takes the ego out of it where it's just like, oh, I'm doing this cause it feels good. Or I'm doing this cause I had an inspiration, or I'm doing this like, cause I'm open and allowing.
Probably a billionaire, owns his own record label.
Yeah.
So again, he can also dictate and all, you know, like all of those things you're saying though.
But I think what he's speaking to is the level of what the human is capable of if we get out of our own ways, right? Now, we all have a baseline we have to reach to feel comfortable. But let's take the baseline and make everybody's baseline there. And you can create however you want to and be the most just like abstract if you want, culturally mainstream if you want. But it's coming from the depths of your soul, right?
Yeah.
And it's funny, I love the idea that you just talked about, Kinsey. Jack White talks about that too.
Yeah.
But I actually had, I recognized that moment within me with an idea.
Oh, I've had recently, so many of those moments, yeah.
So within like the past, like, I'd say year, I was in a meditation, say about a year ago, and I got this idea to do a sound bath in water. So like I'm on a dock, I have people that are the participants are on like floating devices, right? So they have like the big floating mattresses, you get in there, the water, you know, the pool, whatever it is, right? You're anchored in, you get your cozies.
I just saw a video of someone doing that last
night. It's exactly.
Yeah.
So I came out of that meditation, I'm like, amazing. Yeah. Oh my God, I gotta figure this out. So I called some people out. I got stonewalled at the YMCA. I got stonewalled at McMiniman's. I got stonewalled because of insurance shit. I get it.
Right.
I got some stuff kind of lined up for the summertime with friends that have lakes outside and ponds in their houses, right? So, cool. Okay, let's figure this out. Like a week later, I start seeing it all over Instagram, and I'm like...
But isn't that so funny?
Oh, of course. Of course. And it immediately, I'm like, this wasn't my idea.
Right.
This was like...
That idea just needed to live to and have a vessel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it clearly swept.
And I like thinking of it like that.
Yeah, totally.
It takes like, the pressure off.
Yes.
And it also, exactly. Like, if you have one good idea and someone else does it first, you're like, well, I only had that one good idea. I'm never going to have another. It's like, if you're just open and they're floating around, man, catch a fucking other one. Yeah, get like that, the an opportunity will always present itself over and over.
Yeah. Yeah. There. Okay. And I want to circle back real quick to something, Robin, you said about the arrogance of the book. And there is I can see the perception of arrogance, but
yeah, I didn't read it. And it's just like, I heard some bits and pieces. Like, what do you think of this? I'm going, it sounds like, sounds like a fucking multi-platinum fucking artist with a book going, kind of read this because I remember License to Ill. Yeah. License to Ill, bitch.
But see, he doesn't talk about any of that shit.
I know.
But what I want to say, though, is that the arrogance that might be, and everybody has their own objective opinion, right?
You know, do you.
But I can see where there could be arrogance from, like, the interviews I've listened to him and the book that I listened to him narrate. But it's also, I think it is like more of a quiet confidence. It's like, and he's not like,
he doesn't come across.
Yeah. He's not like, never talks about that shit. Look at him. I mean, his hair is all fucking wild. Like,
he's literally looked like that since 87 or whatever.
You know what? The life that I'm living right now, I figured out to where it makes sense to me. And it's like he's a, you know, very spiritual man. It's like that Taoist, you know, middle path. He'll go to the right and help a fucking country artist, you know. Right. He'll go to the left and he'll help a TV fucking actor. He'll go, you know, wherever. But he's just like able to be moved in all these places that, you know, whatever. You know, he's made the financial stability to be able to do that. But good for you, because it seems like from an outsider looking in, he's not touting his riches. He's not touting his success, but he's allowing it to give him the life that makes him the happiest.
Well, I think he has his ability to pick and choose from the best talent and the best whatever at any point. So it's like there's no shortage of products or projects for him.
Yeah.
But I think that's his own doing.
No, of course. Because of the fact that, I mean, shit. Because
he's talented. Licensed
to Ill, bitch.
Yeah.
Starting to jam with Russell Simmons.
Yeah. I think his intention is not to be the best and to be the biggest or the richest or the most successful. His intention is to follow his joy and inspiration. Right. And then the consequences from that are just that he makes a shitload of money. But right. It doesn't, reading the book, seeing his interviews and, you know, knowing him as a human, like it doesn't come across that way. And right. I think when you are somebody like Rick Rubin or Beyonce, you're like, I don't give a fuck. I know who I am. I know the artist I am. Right. I'm confident in who I am. I'm going to say.
It's kind of like, and I know even less about this guy, but I like Dr. Dre quite a bit, but he's released really two albums.
Yeah, exactly.
You and know?
The second album he wrote maybe an eighth of.
It's
the beats, the rhymes were all subbed out by fucking his posse. You know?
Well, Lauryn Hill. Same thing.
Right.
Like, that's one album.
I'm going to give you one fucking album. I don't care. Like, I'm not inspired to do another one, and I'm going to live the rest of my life and just do this one fucking album, and I'm not going to follow the thing that I should be following that you think I should be doing.
Right.
And I'm just going to do my own thing.
Yeah, I think I mentioned the whole Christopher Cross thing, which you got to bring up Christopher Cross whenever you can.
Every chance you get.
It just works. I mean, every day you ride like the wind. Yeah. But I think he fucking said in some interview, it's like, everyone's like, write another album. He's like, this was like a culmination like 15 years of my shit onto this one hit album.
Yeah, yep. Not gonna do that.
You know?
So, Kinsey, I gotta ask you.
Christopher Cross.
Don't listen.
Favorite album.
What do you feel about Beyonce moving to country?
Like, fuck yeah, dude. And you know why?
She's got a Judd sweatshirt on, bro.
Yeah,
that's
I literally wore my Judd sweatshirt.
You love both country and Beyonce.
For the
Here's
radio.
The thing. Music is music, right?
Right.
Musical inspiration comes from all walks of life. The bitch is from Houston.
Oh, yeah.
She grew up with country.
Totally.
You do not have black artists that have access to country music. Why can't she? Why can't she do it? And the other thing is, too.
Just, in general, just move between
genres. Are people upset about this?
Yes.
Yeah.
And she released. Livid about it. Livid about it. And the other thing is there are already a black country artist that Mandy and I both listen to.
Is it because she's black?
So she released something literally yesterday that explained why she's doing a country album. She goes, she had Daddy's Lessons on the Lemonade album, which was her one country track on Lemonade. And she did the duet with the Chicks at the CMT Awards or whatever the big, CMT Awards. And she goes, Beyonce said like yesterday, the reason why I wanted to do a country album is because I went through an experience where I felt so deliberately unwelcome at that performance. She got completely axed from that award show. She got nothing but hate and racism because of the duet she did with the Chicks.
No shit.
And she was like, God damn it, I'm making a fucking country album because fuck y'all. So she started making this album after that performance in 2015.
No
Or whenever, 2016 or whatever it was. So this has been her long con. This is not like a, oh, I'm done with this album. Oh, what am I going to do next? This came from an inspiration of, oh, you said I can't? Watch me. I'm going to release a whole fucking country album. Damn. And I'm going to call it right now. She's doing a Jolene cover.
I saw something about that. I think Dolly
and I had a painting made,
from my understanding,
in 2017 of Dolly Parton and that, Beyonce commissioned
that two things.
The two things.
Yeah, I got some.
So
two
I have put this
house.
Into the universe
Good
that this thing would happen, and it is finally happening. It is happening.
That guy moved to New York or
he
some
did.
Shit.
He's releasing a book, and he just came over for a photo shoot because he's going back to all his old paintings, and then he's interviewing everyone that ordered and commissioned a painting, and we have two of them. And so he, took a picture of it. And we had another of Angela Lansbury doing burlesque as, like, Murder, She Wrote. Oh, so she's got, like, Cabot Cove tattooed on her chest and, like, has, like, a lighthouse and, like,
Holy
you know,
shit.
Whatever.
That was a Red Hook Mall thing, like, when we had an outdoor thing at that's how I met that guy.
Oh, was two things?
The two things guy was like, well, what the fuck was that? We had an outdoor, was it Sausage Fest or something?
Right, it was, yeah,
we had some
fest.
Vendors or some shit
That's
and he was selling
right.
stuff and I'm like,
oh
this is cool as fuck.
Didn't you get something from him?
Yeah, I've got Godzilla fucking destroying that
Hell
Viaduct.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought about commissioning shit. I wasn't on that level at that time.
Well, he came over to do a photo shoot of all the paintings, and so Mandy and I both stripped down to our underwear and then put the painting in front of us, and so it looks like we're naked behind the painting. Yeah. So when his book comes out, there's going to be a naked picture of Mandy and I both just having
Holy
naked Angela
fuck,
Lansbury.
Dude, we're famous adjacent.
That's
yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Fucking Matthew Brennan, look him up. Two things.
Yeah, no, two things. We had to come back into town because those fucking assholes keep defacing that building, the Betty Page,
yeah,
John
Betty
Devine.
Yeah,
Betty
Page House.
Did he do that one?
Yeah, he did that. And, and he's had to come back like three or four times because people keep vandalizing it because...
Because
Betty Page and John Devine painted on the side of a building is just fucking, you know. Grotesque. Again, I am not a fan of the movie Pink Flamingos. I am not a fan.
I don't think but I've seen it.
It's not your audience. I mean, it's not your demographic.
But again,
it ain't for you.
I look at that and go, Pink Flamingos. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Keep driving.
talk about fucking off. Someone finding their own lane. John Waters, like...
Yeah.
That is not mainstream in any way,
Waters,
but the people that get it fucking get it, and he does not care about.
Oh man, that movie made me so uncomfortable.
I don't think I've seen it, but
I was like 13 when I saw that, and I'm like, oh wow, I was.
Serial Mom, it's another good one.
That one's pretty fucking funny.
Mom.
That's John Waters. Uh-huh. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay,
that
okay.
tracks.
Yep.
God, that's a weird fucking movie. Serial Mom.
I think John Waters and Wes Anderson did something together. That'd be interesting.
God.
Very odd.
Just everybody's brains explode.
Yeah.
So many harpsichords. Oh my God.
Yeah, you should probably check out Pink Flamingos. I think that'd be worth seeing once.
Yeah.
I don't remember what was the actual plot of Pink Flamingos.
It's.
Is that like 90s?
No, like 79, 70s. 80,
okay.
something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it's one of his more famous ones.
Okay.
Probably
it's
easier just
familiar.
To watch it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's NC-17. Okay. Might even be rated X.
A lot of them are, yeah.
It might be rated X.
Is he still alive?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, this is back fucking just classic, like, I think my fucking friends and I, like, rode our bicycles to Video Update and fucking rented some shit we had no business renting.
This looks good.
Like, wasn't in the porn section. We're like, oh, we're like, we watch it, we're like, okay, this is not what
I immediately
done.
Regret this.
This is not what was marketed to me.
Naked lunch. Wow, that's misleading.
Oh, man. Yeah, I've had a few of those experiences. Watch a movie, you're all excited. It's like, God, no.
Yeah.
I think Gummo is one of those movies for me.
I've heard that movie's beyond fucked up.
It's yeah.
I'm not trying to see that.
Yeah.
There was one I watched recently. It was a, oh my fucking God, what is it called? Mandy and I were at an Airbnb, and they only had like four DVDs, and we're like,
nice.
Oh, so we're just watching these DVDs, like, and it starred Paul Walker.
Okay.
I have to look up, because it is the most wild, ridiculous movie I've ever seen. It kind of is about a dirty cop who lives next to a criminal, and the criminal is like a drug dealer, mafia guy.
Running Scared? Also
yes!
I saw that.
Yes!
I've seen that.
And then I looked it up, and we watched it, and it was like, what the fuck
Holy
is this movie?
Shit.
And I was like, it's almost Alice in Wonderland.
Okay, so my brother fucking had that movie. My brother's got
it
like
the worst
It is the
most
taste.
Wild. There's pedophile. So
the pedophilia shit. Oh my God,
is,
that shit is so fucking intense.
It doesn't even need to happen. And so basically you're following this kid.
Oh
this kid who lives
God.
Next door to this dirty cop.
Holy
and he
fuck.
And it's his journey.
That was
trying
in an
to get
Airbnb?
Back home. Yes, out of all the DVDs.
The pedophilia
Twilight,
shit was fucking nuts.
Wild.
I was like, I could not.
Wild.
I could not. That's Holy why God. That movie stuck
and it
with
came
me.
Out
I'm like,
of nowhere.
That shit was intense. I'm like, oh, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Oh, what the fuck, fuck?
And it's Elizabeth Mitchell who plays Mrs. Claus in all the Mrs. Claus movies. That was like one of her first movies. And I was like, Elizabeth Mitchell's a pedophile? What is happening?
Well, fucking running
yeah,
scared.
Yeah, it's like a couple. Christ. But so
running
I look it up.
Scared.
And he and the director is like, oh, basically, it's a really dark Alice in Wonderland. And I was like, it fucking is. So this kid is like Alice going through like all of these journeys and meeting all these people. So everyone that he meets is a very dark version of an Alice in Wonderland character. And I was like, oh my God, that it is the most wild movie that makes no sense. And it is just, it comes out of left
running.
Field.
When you said it, this movie with Paul Walker, I'm like, shit, is she going to talk about Running Scared?
Yes.
Because that's like the only Paul Walker movie I can think of outside of like the fucking 65
it's
Fast
so
and the
bad,
Furious.
It's so bad, it's almost
where
good.
Where did it land in the Fast and Furious?
I've only seen the first Fast and the Furious. I've only seen the first
one. I probably have seen it. I don't remember any of it.
You don't live your life a quarter mile at a time?
Man, I've
God.
Actually
winning is winning.
I not watch any of them.
Winning is winning.
Oh, you gotta at least watch the first one all the way through. It's so bad.
Fucking Running Scared. Running Scared.
Running Scared. What a deep cut. Of course you would have seen that.
Fucking Running Scared. Dude, and that was probably like the last year of movies that I've seen like new movies of. I'm like, all right, we're good.
All right, yeah. And we're done.
Like, yeah, we're
and we're done.
Scene. 2006 is
Running
Scared.
Yeah, so a cabin in the woods in the middle of nowhere had Twilight. Freaky. Fucking Notting Hill and Running Scared.
Oh, you didn't
options.
Go Hugh Grant?
Oh, we watched them all. We were there for a couple of days.
We bookended with Notting Hill.
I was like, well, why is this in here? Oh my God.
Shit.
If it's streaming anywhere, do yourself a favor. Watch Running Scared, because it is
the pedophilia
bonkers.
Thing. I'm glad I was just, because that was the only thing. That's literally the only thing I can really remember from that
it's
movie.
It's jarring.
It's fucking dark.
Well, you don't, nothing. There is nothing explicit that happens,
right.
But
no.
The
concept of it,
the
is,
concept
yeah.
of
fucking
what
just,
happens is
it's
like your
somebody
worst
had to write that, and like you know, the reality of that is probably infinitely worse.
Yeah,
and it's
right.
not
just
off,
letting your mind wander is almost
like,
worse.
Holy shit!
But yeah, oh my God,
fucking Running Scared. Yeah, we should call this podcast Running Scared.
Please, no.
That
like
movie's
like,
fucked. Yeah, you should watch that,
dude.
Great.
No, I don't want to watch that.
Oh, dude. Okay, so.
Do you remember the hockey rink scene at the end?
Fuck, I don't
where he
remember.
Just, like, beats the shit out of somebody with an ice skate and, like.
God, see, literally the only thing I can really take away is that just
dark-ass
fucking shit. So I literally was talking about, when I was on vacation, I was talking about you having to claim your digital superiority over the movie Down Periscope because I was like, you're going to buy this digitally. You need to watch this at least 6 or 7 times to recoup the money you spent as opposed to renting it.
Oh,
and then you like texted me like every like month and a half
for
like a year when you watched Down Periscope. My brother's probably seen that movie like 1,000 times.
Great movie.
I mean, it's good. I mean,
I watched.
It's a good movie. So
He goes to sleep to that shit.
Okay, so that's what I was saying. Like,
movie.
Like, I grew up in the era like my dad just like would turn the TV on just to make noise.
Yeah,
he's like,
just
what
to make noise.
My
so,
brother
yeah.
and my dad do that.
And so we would constantly just have these movies rolling in the background all the time. And so I'm just kind of used to that. And so that's one of those movies like. I'll listen to music if I'm doing certain
great
things.
Harlan Williams.
I'll listen to like if I'm watering plants and just wait. Yeah, totally, man. Love I love Harlan Williams, man. But like if I'm watering plants and just bopping around, like I'll
just
throw
put on Rocket Man.
On.
Good, you know, just you know.
Yeah. You know my new favorite one.
That's your
kind of
blue.
Yeah. I really like the new Tarzan. Well, not new, but it's like 2014. But the Tarzan. It's
the animated
one.
No, it's live action. It's Eric from.
True Blood.
Skarsgård. I didn't see that one.
No, it's new. It's good. Pretty it's good? Fun, yeah. But that's that's.
I heard George of the Jungle is good with Brendan Fraser.
Oh, it's so good. He's so hot in that too. He is ripped to the gods.
Classic. That's like
I watched Encino Man for the first time the other day.
Oh, first time on that one. Mm-hmm. Remember when he's like doing the fucking mustard and ketchup thing and he draws the dick on the
Yeah, it was very solid '90s where I was like, oh yeah, okay. But
he's from Estonia, and I think he's. Jive.
Yeah. I just unironically fucking love Pauly Shore. I just love him.
I watched Biohazard the other day.
He did cameos. So Brendan Fraser did the Encino Man cameo in a couple movies around that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like both in like '93. Right. He just like literally just like appeared. Would pop up
and like smell somebody's hair.
Right.
Trying
or
to
like,
fucking remember.
He was in a convenience store. I can see him just walking in a convenience store.
He's in Son-in-Law.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Because that came up recently because Carla.
My girl Carla.
Your girl Carla. Yeah, yeah. It's fucking great.
That's a classic Pauly Shore movie.
Yeah.
Just 90s movie for me.
Inbreeders.
Yeah, so funny.
Fucking so good.
Yeah, I mean, Jury Duty was phenomenal.
Yep.
Biodome's great too.
And I love because I didn't realize Biodome is basically a true story.
The biosphere is down in Arizona.
Well, no, but like. Like, they literally fucked it up, like, severely bad when they first
They had a problem with, like, air filters.
They didn't have enough food or supplies. They opened that door, like, 15 times within the first, like, 3 weeks or 4 weeks there. And they weren't supposed to open it for, like, years, you know? Yeah. So, like, a lot of that movie, Biodome,
Arizona can't fucking do
was
anything,
based
right?
off of... like the comedic happenings of what already happened. With
yeah,
the
I mean,
experiment.
I didn't
know that.
I didn't
they
know that
didn't
like, have. They didn't have a
Viva
a,
Los Biodome. Yeah, yeah.
But hey, man, fucking hell.
This is what Bud and Doyle will call the beer can effect.
Bud and Doyle.
When they try to catch all the insects that they let out. So
look,
the
fucking bird is like.
And Kylie Minogue's in it. I forgot that she was
Kylie
in it.
Kylie Minogue's in it?
She's the she's short, the hot girl. She's the short one of the girls.
She makes out with Pauly Shore in that movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fucking hell. I forgot she was an actress, too.
Yeah, she's everything.
Yeah, and then she went to go, after that, she did, around that same time, she did Street Fighter with Van Damme.
Oh, shit. Boy. Okay, yeah.
She's been around
that
a
is
lot.
A fucking terrible movie.
I remember that movie, yeah.
That movie is awful.
I've watched Mortal Kombat, the older ones,
ooh,
a few times.
Yeah.
It's not bad, but it's still...
The new one was actually pretty fucking
dope,
cool.
Man.
Okay, so that was like a new movie I saw. I saw like the 4-year-old Mortal Kombat. I'm like, wow, this is exactly what I thought it would be, and they're doing a really good job of
just
this shit.
Just a gap from Running Scared all the way to the new Mortal Kombat. Just didn't see any movies
that,
in between.
That's it. So is that like fucking,
just down Periscope
scared.
Until
Yeah, you
then.
Should watch that shit. Yeah, just down...
So wait, so I know that music's a hard thing for you to get new ones.
Oh yeah,
like,
I hate new
movies.
Music.
I mean,
well, okay, so this is the thing: is that it's tough a lot of time. A lot of the movies I do want to see, like a good example of some of the new movies that I have not seen yet that I would like to see would be Oppenheimer, but that's the newest one. But like the second
it.
Top Gun, the second Top Gun, I haven't
okay.
seen that yet. All right.
Yeah,
you know,
it's good.
Yeah,
it's good.
So that's the thing. Is like those are movies I just haven't gotten around to seeing. But
I was
fucking...
so stoked for Oppenheimer. Like I got a ticket for that when they had the you know only on 8mm and it's you know 18,000 miles long and blah
Nolan,
blah blah blah. Yeah.
Air jerk for the radio listeners.
But But I like Christopher Nolan movies, so I was so excited to have Christopher Nolan in charge of a fucking atomic bomb explosion. I was like, this is gonna be so fucking great.
Yeah.
That movie was not good. Yeah. It was boring. They did so the culmination of everything, even the big explosion. I was just so underwhelmed. I was really excited to see it, and I was really not. And I was not happy with what they did with Florence Pugh because you have Florence Pugh, who's an amazing actress. She's playing a real life woman who was also a kick ass lady who did a lot of really cool things, and they just had her fucking and half naked, and that was her entire role was just. Her fucking Cillian Murphy. And I was just like, really? All right.
Huh. Yeah, I watched it.
Spoiler alert. Huh?
It's all real life stuff.
Right, No, I enjoyed it, but I'm easily entertained. Like, I literally, like, if unless I want to find, like we were talking about
My
earlier.
My expectation was just very high, I think, and it just,
But the problem is there's just too many streaming platforms, so I get lost in that. So I never really kind of like, there's no spontaneity on that. It's always like, oh, let's just see what it is. And like, nothing ever appeals. Like, I can never, that's part of it.
Yeah.
I feel like he's just the new Top Gun, though. It's pretty,
I've heard it does a good job paying homage to all the old shit. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not a big Cruise guy. But,
I'm not either, but I watch it on the plane. Yeah.
I canceled my Netflix and shit, and it's like, oh, it was a Netflix-produced show, and it's like that kind of stuff. And it's like, I know there's good shit by them, but it's like, I was just like, if it's got an end by it, it's new, and that's not why I bought Netflix, was to watch shit I didn't get around to the first time.
Right.
Yeah. You know? So, I don't really watch new shit. Really? But, it's not a write-on. I should probably branch out. There's more shit than Silverchair.
There's some good stuff out there.
Or Silverchair Live.
Well,
Silverchair Live. Wait till tomorrow. Hey, Silverchair reference.
Well, I think, for me, it's a little different, too, because, my kids kind of keep me up.
You got to watch newer that shit. Yeah.
So they love watching the stuff, the Marvel stuff and all that shit, So, I stay up to date with a lot of stuff from them. Same with new music,
New rap is tough, man.
It's really tough.
It's all auto-tune mumble rap shit.
It's terrible. I personally, it's all subjective. I personally don't like it.
Well, the mainstream new stuff, agreed, but there are pockets of, but you really have to have an intention to look for it.
But I think it's really interesting too, and I don't know if we talked about this. I meant to bring this up before, but I really appreciate that artists from our generation, the 90s, that are still currently making music, especially the hip-hop folks, right? You got Inspector Deck and
Czarface doing albums
Black Thought doing a solo shit. You have Nas still relevant.
Andre,
right? Right? So what I wanted to ask you guys is, so your thought on that, because yes, Heart was making music, started making music in the 70s, was currently making music in the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. And so maybe our parents just maybe nostalgically felt like Heart was still doing good, but so there's a question on that. Like, do you feel there's still a relevance of them making music? But the other question is, you have bands now.
Those are local treasures. You got to tread lightly about Heart, bro.
Tread lightly.
Well, no, but my other question is that is like, I used to think about Tom Jones and the Vegas Axe is like this super cheesy as shit.
Right. Yeah.
But now you got dudes like the Wu-Tang doing Vegas. Like Wu-Tang's in Vegas. Anderson .Paak and Bruno Mars are going to do a stint in Vegas for Silk Sonic.
Bruno Mars has got $50 million of debt. MGM owns him.
Well, Adele's in Vegas.
Right. So that
the residency, I think, is completely... Because you had the Debbie Reynolds. Yeah. You had the... not Neil Diamond. What the fuck's his name? Wayne
Newton.
Thank you. We got the Wayne Newtons. Yeah. You had the Tom Jones. Right. And that was... I think old Vegas, but I think it is the face of residency in Vegas is completely different. So I think it's like apples and oranges now.
Well, that's it. So that's, my opinion question for you guys was does our kids' generation look at the Wu-Tang being in Vegas as Tom Jones being in Vegas?
I don't think so.
And Nas making new music as Heart making music in the 90s for us, or somebody maybe a non-relevant band that was still kind of trying to be relevant.
It's tough because I don't talk to anyone young.
You gotta ask them. All,
but it's just they're the shit that is quote being marketed to them, and that presumably in my mind, I had the luxury of being in fucking middle school when Pearl Jam and Soundgarden. Right. So it was we're listening to this, but it's people consume music differently, and the shit they're hearing is way fucking different now. So, what they consider cool is real cool, and, for all I know, fucking Alice in Chains sounds like that fucking ragtime shit that my parents do. Let's go get out the 78s.
Yeah. Well, then you got, U2 at the Sphere. And U2 is not a band that I particularly enjoy. Yeah, but, they have a huge following.
It's a beautiful day.
I can't. Hey, you and I don't like U2. But,
good harmonies.
But I do think about that where it's I don't know. I think they're still cool and relevant, but I'm 37, so I don't know.
I'm leaning into that get off my lawn shit. I'm whatever, you fucking kids don't listen to any good. Come at me with a good hip-hop artist under the age of 30.
Yeah.
It isn't Mac Miller.
Well, it's interesting because, like, you know, Andre 3000, you know, did a bunch of interviews to support his new album, The New Blue Sun. And he talked about, you know, why he didn't create another hip hop album is because he didn't feel like he had anything to write about.
Right.
He's, you know, in his 40s, you know, he's like, what do I got to write about? Fucking like, colonoscopy. And yeah. Stuff, you know, and I've heard that clip be played for people like Lil Wayne, Nas, you know, and it's like, you know, you can see the look on their face of like, man. There's still so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Like, it, you find that within you, and it's sad that somebody at the level of Andre said that, whether he means it or not, but he said it, you know. But when it's, I hear the people like Black Thought's new albums, and, you know, people that are from those 90s generations that are pushing 50, if not more, like, motherfucking Killer Mike won the Grammy for Best Album of the Year, and he's 48.
Right.
Right. And he's not a mumble rapper. He's got fucking profound shit to say in a very prophetic way. Right.
But I think it's true for Andre because he is, I feel like he is a musical genius, and I feel like he picked up on an idea vibration that really got tunnel focused, and good for him. Like, that's okay. It doesn't mean that maybe 10 years from now he might get re-inspired to do another rap album. Like, you never say never, but, like, that's just not where he is right now.
Right.
And I think for him, when you are trying to force something just because you have done something, and I've experienced this as a performer, where it's like, I don't really have I mean, improv was my life for a very, very long time.
Yeah, you did that for a fucking grip.
And I don't have anything in me right now that is screaming at me to do that.
Right.
And I enjoyed it. I loved it. I felt like I was good at it. But right now, my body's just like, it's not what's, you know, lighting my bulbs up.
So you know, how do you think that dude who does the Whose Line Is It Anyway, the guy who was on Wade the Brady. Drew Carey show, has the pretty long nose, the big tall white guy.
He's local. He lives in Bellingham. Brian Stiles, he literally
tours on that shit, like, just fucking nonstop, just like, you know, doing the casino thing, just like, oh, here's my fucking hat.
Literally the only improviser in the world that makes money. He is really? The only one.
He's like
doing improv. Nobody else is making money
Ryan
doing improv.
Styles, man.
Well, there's another thing that Andre said that kind of might piggyback on what you're saying, is that he says that he's a catalyst artist. Like, he's realized he's a catalyst artist. And so basically he does things that may inspire people to do other things. Right?
And new things.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It, for him, it's not new anymore. Even though I'm doing something at saying something new, I'm still, the vehicle is still the same.
Yep.
So I want to get out of this vehicle altogether and get in another car because I'm bored.
Yeah.
So,
and this new thing that might make people scratch their heads might make other people be like, oh, I can do something with that.
And who's to say that in 10 years that we're all going to point back to this fucking album being like, oh, he changed the entire trajectory of this genre.
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
So,
took 35 years for fucking Fast Car.
Tracy Chapman. Always Tracy Chapman.
Always
back to that first seminal album. Oh, it's just so easy to go back to it.
It's just the through line in all of our lives.
Yeah, it's just, you should probably get a TC tattoo.
Yeah.
That would be your first and only.
God, could you imagine if I get just fucking Tracy Chapman, like the Anthony Kiedis tattoo on the shoulder?
Just
you
get, know, just Tracy get a Chapman. Fast car. Just get a fast car.
Yes.
I suggest on the stomach.
Yeah.
Or back piece, the like Steve-O's back piece.
Oh, yeah.
Back Tracy piece, yeah. Chapman's Chabot. First album.
With the twisty hairs.
Yeah. Totally, oh, gosh. Yeah. That's the problem with that is you got to get shading right because it's difficult, you know, kind of.
Dude, you are so pale. It's easy to get the shading right.
You are the
real
perfect
good
canvas.
Point.
Yes.
You are
real
the perfect canvas.
Fucking blank canvas.
Yeah, you are a blank canvas, my
the
friend.
The problem is I don't have a lot of meat on this potato here, so it's
going
to be.
Hurt.
It's gonna hurt like a
motherfucker.
It's gonna be like one of those Halloween movies where he's like playing the bongos on a skeleton. Like, ding, 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 ding. Shit.
Going over your spine, just.
Oh, fuck, man.
Oh, sorry, I'm just trying to get this line.
Oh, man, that's gonna be so many sessions.
Yeah.
Can I watch?
Fucking shit.
You gotta live stream
do
that.
Pay-per-view. I'll make like tens of dollars on that. Oh, fuck, it hurts.
I have a friend that went in. She got like a big leg piece done. And she wanted her boyfriend or her husband to go with her. And so my friend was just getting carved on for like 5 hours. She was like telling me afterwards. She's like, yeah, it was fucking horrible. You know, you go back over and shade over with already carved and blah, blah, blah. And the thigh is like really sensitive.
Yeah.
And she looked at me and she's like, yeah, my husband had the balls to look at me. He was sitting there the whole time just reading in a chair, reading his book. And he looked up after about 4 hours and was like, You think you're almost done? My back's getting kind of sore. And
oh,
she's like,
motherfucker.
This is why women are superior. He can't sit in a chair comfortably.
The tattoo gun from the tattoo artist and fucking poked him in the eye. I'm like,
how dare you,
dude.
Sir? How dare you?
So, yeah, man. But I'll come watch. I'll support you, man. Mm-hmm. That'd be great. We can do a
man, that
podcast.
Looks like it's really hurting. Does it really hurt?
Yeah.
It looks like
it really
hurts. It
fucking hurts.
Yeah.
I'll make it worse.
I don't know if I can just do an entire back piece. It's a bit ambitious.
Yeah, get something small.
Like those people in their 50s that have no tattoos, and then like 7 months later they have full sleeves and shit. Like, ah.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair,
I've just always liked Koi.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of those folks have always wanted something done, but
yeah, it's
societally said.
Can't get
very
a job.
Good point. I mean, we've talked about that one before.
Yeah.
I've talked to so many people that are like, yeah, maybe when I'm 80, I'm just going to get covered because I do want tattoos, blah, blah. I was like, well, then do it now.
Yeah.
If you want to do it, just do it.
I mean, well, I waited to go below my elbows until I knew I was in a job that was going to be okay with me having sleeves.
I was really grateful that I waited until my cortex was fully formed to start getting like big tattoos.
Fair, yep.
Because the tattoos that I almost got in my 20s, I would have fucking hated now. And two of them are covered up. Like, so like the ones that I did get.
Well, you like get like the breakfast group with like the waffles
and
the pancakes.
Like, basic shit. And also like, yeah, like just basic ass stuff. Like, oh, I want an Aries tattoo.
Well,
really?
Especially now that,
all
like,
right.
They have those self-tattoo kits that are so easy for these kids to like do their own little stick poke tattoos.
They're going,
it's like, God damn
off
it.
The rails.
I see all, you know, do you, right? But like you said, it's good that this stuff wasn't around when our brain wasn't fully formed, because I would have the
so many
stupidest
stupid
things
shit.
On my body.
Not that, even that, like fun stupid
shit. So many stupid
shit. Right, yeah. Just the S's that you draw in class, the diamond S's. Yeah.
All right, well, we'll end it there now.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time.